This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
You're listening to This Day in History, a podcast dedicated to examining history from a standpoint of determining which event on any given day had the greatest impact on our lives. Now your host, Tony Hubert and Armand Kachigian.
Welcome in. It's This Day in History. Armand and Tony here with you on lineupmedia.fm. Happy November 30th out there to everybody. Armand, how are you on this fine day?
Oh, not doing badly. Ready to get started, though.
You are?
Ready to
jump right in. You're chomping at the bit. You're chomping.
Yeah, we've got some great stuff.
As we say, this is not your normal history show. We endeavor to see which event in history that occurred on this date has most affected your lives to this date.
Yes.
We have some interesting topics to get in depth to today. But before we start, I want to remind everybody, we're brought to you by Amazon.com. and by Audible.com. You can get a free audiobook trial at Audible.com simply by going to audibletrial.com/thisdayinhistorypodcast. A 30-day free trial is waiting for you and one free audiobook download, and we will give you suggested titles all throughout the show for you to check out, not just for Audible, but for Amazon as well. And with Christmas now a mere 25 days away, go to our site, thisdayinhistorypodcast.com, click on that Amazon banner, and if you haven't done it already, get that Christmas shopping done.
Yeah, it's not quite as intimidating when you've got Amazon.
No, it takes the sting out of it.
Boy, I'll tell you.
Especially out of the parking lots. All right, here we go. 3340 BC. Guess what happened?
Well, I've got it written in front of me, so I won't ruin the surprise.
You take the suspense out of it.
You go ahead.
The earliest believed recording of an eclipse occurs.
Who was it?
Doesn't say. But the earliest recording of an eclipse.
3340. Probably Egypt.
I have to imagine it would be Egyptian.
Could be China.
Could be Chinese as well, yeah. In 1853, in the Crimean War, the Battle of Sinop, the Imperial Russian Navy, under the direction of Pavel Nakhimov, he destroyed the Ottoman fleet that was under the Osman Pasha at Sinop, which is a seaport in northern Turkey. That'll be on the Black Sea.
Crimea is
170 years later, still in the news.
One of my favorite wars, actually.
You have favorite wars.
Well, now, it's a couple things about it. The Victoria Cross, which we all know.
That originated from
the Crimean War.
Now, was that originated from the charge of the Light Brigade?
No, I don't believe so. Okay. But the first Victoria Crosses were given out at the battle, at that war.
And they were simply just named for Queen Victoria?
Yes, of course. And what I believe, now I'm not sure if this is still true, but for a while there, all the Victoria Crosses were cast from the cannon that they captured at Sevastopol.
Which was a Russian cannon.
Yeah, the Russian forge.
So they're forging that out of Russian iron?
Yeah, that's where they
to this day?
I think so.
Wow.
Yeah. And do you know when the last survivor of the Crimean War, you want to take a guess when the last survivor of the Crimean War, which was fought in, I believe, 1851 to 56, when the last survivor died?
I think Stalingrad, 1942.
No, I mean, what day? You want to say 1942?
Yeah.
2004. It's kind of a trick question.
Okay.
And I'll get you. Because one of the mascots.
Yeah, I'm lost.
Well, the mascot on the ship, the British ship York, which bombarded Sevastopol.
You didn't tell me it's a turtle.
It was a tortoise. And his name Timothy. And Timothy died in 2004. And what's ironic is Timothy was a girl. So.
Well, you know.
But yeah, so there you go. Last survivor. Died a few years ago.
One of the big turtles, like the Galapagos type turtle?
Or? I'm not sure. We'll have to look Timothy up.
Timothy.
It's a tortoise.
Well, in 1864, another battle, the Battle of Franklin, the Confederate Army of Tennessee, which was under the leadership of General John Bell Hood, they mount what's called a dramatically unsuccessful full frontal assault on the Union positions under the command of John McAllister Schofield around Franklin, Tennessee. Hood loses 6 generals and almost a third of his troops in the encounter. Today, if you are in Franklin, Tennessee, you can see the spot, I believe, but Franklin, Tennessee, 150 plus years later, is now one of the swankiest sort of suburbs of Nashville.
Oh,
it is a beautiful city.
Well, we were talking about this on my other show, Ocho Man. I don't know how it came up. Because
Be behind the eight ball.
Yes, we don't discuss much of this stuff because they're fools. But what I was discussing was, and even Ocho Man realized the logic of this. I think I'll just ask you if you agree with this.
Okay.
I was reading an article. It wasn't a book. It was just a little article on and I'd never contemplated this, but, you know, the Southern generals, more or less, you know, Hood, Lee, I guess Sheridan, or I don't even know which side he was on, but all the Southern generals were basically West Point graduates.
Oh, yeah,
okay. Yeah, so the ones that were from the South just, you know, left West Point and fought for their homeland. Well, whoever wrote this, a military man, of course, and it was his contention that had the South had not had these guys trained at West Point to fight a war, which is basically fought under orthodox conditions, frontal attacks like this, and I kind of stupidity.
Still very standing army and some cavalry.
A very orthodox kind of war, right, even though there's some trenches and things like that, a few new things, but they fought a war as they were trained at West Point. And this guy's contention is, had they fought a war more like the American Revolution.
A guerrilla war.
Exactly. And more unorthodox and guerrilla-type war that the North never could have won. And I tend to agree with that. If these mountain boys had just sequestered themselves and lived off the land and fought little battles and then ran hit-and-run kind of tactics, I don't think the North ever could have won.
And what, just bleed the North to death?
Exactly, until they just finally got sick of it and left.
Even with the endless supplies and...
Yeah, but that wouldn't have made that much difference because they're not fielding these huge armies anyway and take from the North what they could find.
That's an interesting point.
Basically what the American Revolutionists did and just kind of fight this grind it out kind of...
Will be a nuisance until
somebody just
decide it's time to go away.
What do you think about that theory?
I do think there's something to that because at some point the Northern populace's tolerance
exactly
for the Civil War would have put so much political pressure on Lincoln, maybe as early as the second term, that
I don't think he'd even have won.
Only really got started.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think he's only a month into the second term when he is assassinated because the inaugural was in March rather than January, which it is today. Yeah, I mean, how long does the second term go before the pressure just ratchets it up to such a level?
I don't think he would have even won had they fought like that.
Okay, so you're saying prior to November.
He didn't beat McClellan by much.
In 64.
Yeah, because Sherman was his march, et cetera, and that really helped, you know, and they had some victories.
Well, July 4th, 1863 really helped when you got two big ones
day. Vicksburg
and Gettysburg.
And Fort Donelson and all that, but... Had you not had these huge pitched battles like that, and you're just, you know, even if you're winning, which the British did pretty much, they won most of the battles, as we did in Vietnam.
Well, you can win all the battles and lose the war.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think the guy's right. It's interesting. It's an interesting take.
I'd have to speculate on that more.
Okay.
But I would think the North.
I think they would have grown war weary very quickly.
War weariness does set in for at any time in any age. A population will only withstand so much of their resources being donated to a war.
And it's my contention here again. Now, we can go. Now, you know, I'm not a big Civil War guy. I'm more of a World War I, World War II fan. And Crimea, by the way. But it's my contention, but the books I've read, that the war obviously wasn't fought over slavery.
It was obviously fought over slavery.
No, it wasn't. Not initially. I mean, Lincoln basically, the only reason they even fought the war, and this is documented, is because the South had these ports, and when they established a Confederacy, they wanted these ports to be totally tariff-free. Now, up north, they didn't really care if the South seceded until they got wind of that. And then Boston, New York, and all the big ports, they didn't like that because you know what that would have done to them, to their business, and to all the transactions that were going on over there. Everybody would have just gone to the South.
Well, a free trade zone, essentially.
Yeah, exactly, which is what we need now. But anyway, we'll discuss that later. But that's why the North really, and that's why Lincoln chivied them into fighting, and that whole nonsense about the firing on Fort Sumter, which we'll, one of these days we'll get to that. That's a complete myth. So just a few in the,
really,
future.
He's getting it off his chest, folks.
Yeah,
that, he really gets upset about
yeah,
this.
I'm not a big Lincoln fan either.
My goodness. I mean, how can you not be a fan of
great
Lincoln?
Great man. Not my favorite president. And in fact, I think we're going to do a little more iconoclastic today with our British
there'll be a
friends.
British counterpart that probably gets it between the crosshairs from you. In 1934, the LNER Class A3-4472 locomotive, better known as the Flying Scotsman, becomes the first steam locomotive to be authenticated as traveling at 100 miles per hour.
I know nothing about it.
I love the railroads.
Where, yeah, that's interesting.
Well, LNER is London and Northeastern.
Oh, okay.
So somewhere out in the flats.
That's actually pretty early. I would have thought it'd be later. A locomotive reached 100 miles an hour.
It is pretty early. It's a smaller size locomotive.
Okay.
Also, just years later, the advent of diesel.
Yeah.
And especially diesel, like the Santa Fe Super Chief and other trains, could achieve these speeds in the American West without much of a problem.
The record is easy. Don't they hit 300 miles?
There's a maglev train in Germany that goes over 300. The bullet trains in Japan generally go 160 plus.
France, the TG Marseille goes a pretty good clip.
The TGV, I want to say, is actually in the 240
range.
Where's
this?
The Paris to Marseille route.
Yeah. Right. All right.
Okay, on this date in 19... Here's one that's just going to... This knocks your socks off. Oh, literally, almost. In Sylacauga, Alabama, a lady is sitting... Well, she's not even sitting, Armand. She's taking a nap. She's taking an afternoon nap.
Elizabeth Hodges.
Elizabeth Hodges is taking an afternoon nap in her home when suddenly...
What happened?
When suddenly she gets hit...
My God, a cow?
No.
Oh.
By a meteor.
A meteorite.
A meteorite.
Correct. A meteor, they're
you know, I understand.
We do understand the difference. We should explain that to our audience.
Yeah. Hence named the Hodges meteorite, crashes through the roof and hits her as she's asleep.
Yes.
Yeah, what's that's amazing.
What's interesting to me is, though, she just had a bruise. Now, this thing was 8.5 pounds. And it was like 7 inches in diameter. That you would think that would kill her.
I don't understand how she only had a bruise.
Yeah, it just broke her leg. Maybe going through the roof, it kind of broke its fall. I don't know.
At 9.8 meters per second squared until it reaches terminal
velocity. Yes. Well, we can go into that sometime too.
Come on. But, I mean, that not only should take a
you would think it would break
her
leg.
You think it should take a leg off?
Yeah, she did pretty well though.
And keep
maybe
going.
Maybe grazed her. I don't know.
And keep going through the bed, through the floor, and if she had a basement, into the basement before embedding itself.
Right. Well,
the fact that she lived through that is astounding.
Yeah. Anyway, the difference between a meteor is just a piece of space debris which burns up in the atmosphere, and a meteorite is actually one that hits the ground. So that's the subtle difference.
And the best place to find meteorites?
Well, they look in Antarctica, obviously, because it's in the snow.
It's brilliant.
That's where they find them. Yeah.
Find it against the dark. Find the dark rock against the white snow. 1994, the MS Achille Lauro catches fire off the coast of Somalia. We only bring that up because the Achille Lauro, 9 years previously, had been hijacked.
That's right.
And it just gruesome.
Assassination
of a passenger named Leon Klinghoffer.
Klinghoffer in his wheelchair. Rolled him off, those bastards.
Unbelievable.
We don't condone that, by the way, on this show.
I remember I was about 14 at the time.
Harrowing, yeah.
And that thing, because there was footage.
Yeah, they showed it. Yeah.
It upset me so much that a human.
Do you get similarly worked up when you see these ISIS executions?
I get physically, repulsed.
Yep.
Yes.
They're pretty tough to watch.
Yes. I mean, I have a hard, almost out of respect for the dead, I'm not going to sit and gawk at it.
No.
But
now you see it routinely almost.
It's horrible. And I never want to be desensitized to that. You know what I'm saying?
Tough.
I never want to be desensitized to that level of cruelty.
Yeah, they put that on. You see it all over the place, but... If you really want to feel better, though, go on Facebook and watch, you know, when they put the baby, they give him glasses or they give him a corneal implant or whatever. That's kind of nice. That makes you feel better.
No, it's true. I like the babies who hear their mom's voice for the first time.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that one's
a great one, yeah.
1995, the official end of Operation Desert Storm.
Yeah, I didn't know it was that long.
I didn't either. But that's when it officially wrapped up operations. In 1999, in Seattle, one of the first WTO, World Trade Organization, meetings is held. And it has the anti-globalization protesters attached to it.
Yeah, I'm with the protesters on this one.
Yeah, you hate the WTO.
I don't like the World Trade Organization.
Would you get out and protest with those guys?
Sure.
All right, Armand.
If there's some chicks out there, I think I'd protest with anybody. You know that. I'm a Bernie fan if it's going to help me out.
And in 2005, John Sintamo, he becomes the first black archbishop in the Church of England with his enthronement as the 97th Archbishop of York.
I didn't know that.
How about that? Congratulations, John. Three other quick ones that Armand, you wanted to touch on.
Yeah.
1016.
More than touch.
Canute the Great. Tell me about Canute the Great.
Well, he was a Dane, actually. And, for centuries, these Vikings were raiding the English coast and inland. And, they were really one hell of a pain in the ass.
I never knew Viking was a verb until some of the guys in the office told me. That
of using it as a verb?
No, that's where the term comes from, because they would go Viking.
Oh, huh.
Like marauding.
I didn't know that was,
It was really interesting.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll have to look that one up. I didn't know that. Who told you that in this office?
Your would-be cousin.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not.
All right, well, I'm really going to have to think. I'm going to have to look that one up.
Host of Ocho Man's Behind the
Eight Ball. Definite corroboration, because he's not what I would call, I don't have any confidence in him as a source. But anyway, Canute the Great, he was king of England, and for all intents and purposes, a very wise and able ruler, and a Christian. Actually went to see the Pope in Rome and everything. He did it right.
They're very good.
And had a couple of wives. You got a concubine or two, so you got to give him a break there. And if you didn't, if you didn't turn into a Christian, he'd hack your head off. But
seems a small price to pay.
Yeah. So he was actually a crusader, and.
A lot of money in that crusading business.
But
that's a hell of a racket. That's a hell of a racket.
Sometimes it doesn't work out so good for like the Knights Templar, et cetera. But anyway, he ruled until, I believe, 1016. He took over on this date in 1016. And the King of England, who was Edmund Ironside, was killed. And he took over for a while. Now, what's interesting is what happened was he ruled for a while until his son took over, Harold.
Harold Pinter.
No. Harold Lloyd? No. Harold Hardrada. Harold Hardrada, who fought at the Battle of Stamford Bridge, which we'll get to someday.
Well, which is now
a big one.
Which is now home to Chelsea FC.
Oh, okay. Well,
the beautiful stadium.
Harold II of England won that one, but unfortunately, it's just a couple of weeks before the big one, and he had to go after he beat Harold Hardrada. He had to go back south and fight William the Conqueror,
and that's the Battle of Hastings,
1066, and we'll get through all that.
But anyway, I know you love soccer. So Stamford Bridge is a beautiful facility now.
No, I
they
love
commemorate
battles
it.
On English
they
soil.
They commemorate it with a game almost every Saturday.
Okay, I think you have something for us.
Oh, I've been there. It's a great spot. Two more for you. 1902, Kid Curry is captured.
Who is called the wildest of the Wild Bunch, actually.
Yeah.
Butch Cassidy and Sundance weren't
now,
really.
Now tell me,
marauders.
In the Wild Bunch, who plays Kid?
It's Ted Cassidy, the huge guy.
Ted Cassidy.
Because his real name's Harvey Logan. Remember, he said Harvey. Remember the fight he had?
Yeah.
There's nothing fair. He kicked him in the groin, et cetera. That was Kid Curry.
Okay.
Although I don't think Kid Curry is like 7 feet tall. Like Ted and Lurch. Ted Cassidy's Lurch. So I don't know I don't think there's any resemblance, but that's who it was.
Beautiful.
And he got captured in 1902 in Knoxville, Tennessee, escaped. This guy was a badass. Let me tell you, he killed a lot of people. He was slippery. But they finally got him in a shootout. And I love this, Parachute, Colorado.
Parachute, Colorado.
Yeah,
God, they got the best names
and
back.
And never take him alive. He shot himself in the head.
I once drove through Two Guns, Arizona.
Yeah, there you go. Good
Two
stuff.
Guns, Arizona.
Yeah.
What a – oh, man. I mean, you think Tombstone, Arizona is a good enough net. Two Guns, Arizona. It's awesome. Okay, one more before we get to our big topics for today, November the 30th. 1950, on this date, November the 30th, Harry S. Truman says he'll drop another big
if
one.
He has to. Yep. Just to ensure peace in Korea, he's going to flatten it.
What would the ramifications of that have been at that point?
I don't know. I think
you're saying he said this in 1950.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean he would have done it on this date in 1950.
Well,
did the Russians had an H bomb by then?
An A bomb.
An
A bomb. Nobody
had an H.
I think 51.
And the Chinese did not have a nuclear device.
But what would have happened if had MacArthur cross the Yalu River and invaded China? It's probably more that would probably be more of a declaration of war.
Yeah.
Because I don't think the Chinese really would have cared if we dropped an atom bomb on the Koreans and their own people.
I don't think so.
Because Mao said, you know, they're paper tigers. Yes. You can kill whatever.
And I don't know how much of northern Manchuria he was really concerned about.
But had we invaded, that may have been the big one. I don't know.
That's an interesting one.
We're going to that one.
That's an interesting one. Okay, this program brought to you by Amazon.com and Audible.com. As I mentioned, we've got birthdays coming up. A lot of good birthdays today. Of course, we always end the show on a downer, deaths.
I don't know about that.
Well, sometimes it's uplifting.
A necessary evil.
Well, let's get to some of our big topics today. We have four major ones today. Two are specifically mine. Two are specifically Armand's. We're going to begin with Armand. We're going to take you to 1782. The American Revolutionary War is the topic, and the Treaty of Paris. On this date in 1782, representatives from the United States and the Kingdom of Great Britain sign that preliminary peace article, later to be formalized as the Treaty of Paris.
Right, 1783. The only reason I bring that up is because everybody knows this. It's not, you know, like a really – I mean, obviously, it's a big piece of news, and we're still, of course, we're independent so far. So you never know. We may go back. Well, why not? So anyway, the only reason – do you know the last battle of the – another trivia question. The last battle of the Revolutionary War was fought.
I thought it was fought on the peninsula at Yorktown.
That's what everybody says.
And so what's the truth?
Cuddalore, India. Because basically the French declared war on the British to help us.
Yes.
And they were still at war.
Yes.
And you know, the French, they fight you everywhere.
Oh, sure.
So it was kind of a world war almost, and they're fighting the British in India.
Really?
And they laid siege to Cuddalore, and they took it. And then the Treaty of Paris, they found out like months later after the Treaty of Paris that the war's over.
Sort of like the end of the War of 1812.
Right, which we'll go into sometime.
Unnecessary battle in New Orleans.
Right. Actually wrote a movie about that myself. If somebody asks you, that's actually the answer to the trivia question, because that's technically the Revolutionary War. And it was fought in India.
Very good. So okay. The ramifications of this one, though. Signed, sealed, delivered independence at this point for nation that, while not huge in landmass at the time, is going to acquire a lot of land real soon.
And had the British not blown it, you know, and I'm talking about not only George III, and I think Lord North didn't really do a real great job. You know, if cooler heads had prevailed in England and they had just given us some of what we wanted, well, who knows what would have happened. But there would have been no war, because I think about 60% or maybe even more of the colonists did not want war.
Well, there were certainly royalists among the colonists, and there were certainly loyalists.
Yeah.
So would the United States, Armand, have become sort of Canada Part Two?
Yeah, I think that's probably reasonable.
You know, would have been the Commonwealth of America. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And
I think so.
Would there have been an even closer relationship between Canada and the U.S. than there already is?
I don't know about that, but I'm not sure exactly what would have happened to the rest of it. We're going to have another incident from about that time coming up, I believe, one of yours.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that would have happened. I doubt it. I'm not sure. I think that would have been another country, actually.
It could have been. Where might have the borders of
I think it would have ended up more or less like Germany, where all these, you know, disparate parts,
mm-hmm.
We would have eventually broken off from England and formed more or less like a with this other country that would have happened, that would have come to pass. And I think we'd still be the United States, albeit in some sort of different except, you know, California, of course.
Would we have the manifest destiny?
Trump would still have won, and California would probably secede. So that would...
You're still calling that?
You think so? I don't know.
Would we have a shore-to-shore country?
I think so, yeah. But like I said, it would have been a totally different way of that.
A totally different path.
More accretion kind of thing. Like I said, like Germany and Italy.
Because the ramification here is,
all these
different provinces. The two big sort of matzo balls out there. Does Texas ever come into that union? And does the Republic of California ever come into that
Florida,
union?
We took on Florida from Spain.
Right.
I don't know. Obviously, things would have been a lot different, but it's interesting.
That's an interesting one to ponder. That's worth the future thinking about. Okay, let's move to our next big one. In 1803, I've always been fascinated by this. I sincerely, when you talk about the just – things that seemingly don't affect anything, yet you remember it's all connected.
All right.
A nation gets in debt. They need to pay for a war. And they change the course of modern history in the stroke of a pen. In 1803, in New Orleans, Spanish representatives officially transfer the Louisiana Territory to a French representative.
Yeah,
and then just 20
the Spanish fighting at this time.
Just 20. No, it's the French who are going to be are in the war, as you know.
Well, Napoleon.
Yeah,
this, I guess.
Just 20 days later, France transfers the same land to the United States as the Louisiana Purchase, doubling the size of the territory of the country. And for my money, the most masterful, brilliant stroke of Thomas Jefferson ever. Just do it. I know the declaration, I know the writing of the day, but he took the country in terms, look at the natural resources acquired. Look at the waterway acquired.
Wouldn't you think it was an accident, though? Because he really didn't know what he was buying.
He didn't know what he was buying, but he knew he had to buy it.
Yeah.
He knew that opportunity was presenting itself and he had to seize it. And, you know, it's not like he sent Lewis and Clark out to examine it and say, yeah, okay, I think we will buy this. No, he bought sight unseen largely, and then he figured out what he had. And that's the brilliance of it. It's like when they used to call Alaska, what, Seward's Folly?
Right.
Okay, same thing. Buy it. When land is what they make no more of. If you can get some, you get some.
But I'm not sure that Jefferson, you know, obviously, I think as it began, Jefferson was just going to buy New Orleans, right?
Well, because it's a port.
Yeah.
And then the deal.
Take it all.
Yeah, the deal got sweetened, which how can
timing's you. Timing's everything. Napoleon did need the money, I believe, and he was fighting a war. He really couldn't defend it if he had to fight. So.
But look at what that.
No, it's a good deal.
The territory that has been given. The reason
what
that.
What we pay for it? Was it
$15 million.
$15 million. Okay. Do you know the most expensive parcel of land the United States bought? And I was $7 million for Alaska, so obviously not that. The Gadsden Purchase wasn't much.
No, I don't. I can't. No, I'm not.
The Virgin Islands, we paid $17 million for.
Well, that's not bad.
So I don't know. You might not think.
No, that's
not bad. On a per acre basis, I think we got kind of gypped on that one.
It's a lot of beachfront property.
Okay. Well, all right. If you like to
vacation.
That's
why Cuba's valuable.
As long as they have topless beaches, I guess it's worth it.
They'll have some for you.
Really?
I'll have some.
All right, book
but
my
that's
passage.
The purchase, the Louisiana Purchase, which
a good deal,
which I live in.
Yeah,
technically, we a lot of America lives in it. And then the subsequent exploration by Lewis and Clark, which again, if you've never read Undaunted Courage by Stephen Ambrose, the sort of the narrative history.
I like Ambrose.
Yeah, it's an incredible read, and you know, from there, once you've got that much land, it's not too much harder to go all the way to the Pacific at that point. And now you've established basically an empire. And that's what I'm an unapologetic fan of Thomas Jefferson, and I always will be.
Okay, yeah, and slaveholder and all that.
I apologize for nothing.
Good for you.
Nothing.
It's an interesting brand of history they teach these days.
He
in
was.
In fact, they did a study.
He was a man of his time. He did what he did. And our nation, I think he is most responsible out of all the founding fathers for how our nation looks today.
Okay. Well, that's
looks and behaves. I think Jefferson's fingerprints are on it more than anyone else's. I know Washington's the first president. I know but Jefferson, he touched everything. He traveled to Paris. He bought the Louisiana Purchase. He was the writer. He, you know.
Architect.
He did it all.
Yeah,
I mean, he was a Renaissance man through and through. Absolutely amazing. All right. We're halfway through this edition of This Day in History for November 30th. Let's have some birthdays. You ready, Armand?
Yeah.
There's some good ones today. Some I'm going to go quick on. 1466, Andrea Doria, the Italian admiral. Why is he famous today?
Well, the ship.
Ship turned over right outside of New York. As George Costanza said when he couldn't rent an apartment from an Andrea Doria survivor, then he finds out only 53 people perished on that cruise. His classic reply, how many people die on a normal cruise?
Oh, that's poor taste.
Well, it's Seinfeld. Of course it's poor taste. 1667 on this date, Jonathan Swift is born.
Everybody should do themselves a favor and read A Modest Proposal. Of course, he's more known for Gulliver's Travels. And by the way, do you know Gulliver's first name? Trivia question.
Charles.
Lemuel. Lemuel Gulliver.
Never would have guessed that.
A trivia question.
1835, Mark Twain is born. Well, that's actually a misnomer. Yes. Mark Twain is not born. Samuel Clemens.
Langhorne Clemens.
Is born and adapts the name Mark Twain. You know the Mark Twain?
Yeah, 12 feet, I believe.
Yeah.
That's
in
Mississippi.
If the depth is this, Mark Twain.
Right.
For the captain.
Depth of the river. Yeah,
for the
river
channel.
Boats. We'll go into him someday. And
favorite Twain
detail.
Book?
You know, I got to say, Connecticut Yankee and King Arthur's Court.
More than Huck.
Yeah. I was never a big Huck fan. I like Tom Sawyer better than Tom Huck.
I loved
it. But yeah, it was a great book.
I once read this statement about Twain and Melville, that there's really two American books. We read them to this day, and in 100 years from now, our children and their children will be reading them.
I think Huck Finn's going to be banned.
Hopefully.
Yeah, I don't think
and
so.
Those two books are Moby Dick and Huck Finn.
You know, I got to admit, I couldn't get through Moby Dick. I mean,
you're kidding.
You got about 180 pages of whales.
Sorry, excuse me, pardon me.
The whales and their mating habits. I just didn't like Moby Dick.
On this day, 1874, the future Prime Minister, Nobel Prize laureate, a colonel, a journalist, and a politician, Winston Churchill is born.
Yeah. I'm a little ambiguous. What am I? I'm forgetting the word.
Were you nonplussed?
No, yeah, I guess I am. I'm speechless. I grew up very admiring Winston Churchill.
Believe me.
You know, as a World War II ambivalent is what I am.
Okay.
The more I read about him, the less I like him.
Why? Why so?
Well, I mean, here again, I was reading the book, you know, about Churchill, Hitler, and the Unnecessary War, and it's got some pretty good. It's got a bibliography and its sources, and. You know, Churchill, by his own admission, loved war. He loved the First World War, wanted to fight in it, couldn't wait to. And, you know, the Dardanelles campaign was pretty much his baby, the Gallipoli campaign, which cost a lot of British.
Well, it cost him politically, too. It cost him his.
But, I mean, how many people were dead?
No, I understand that.
And
I was going to ask you about Gallipoli.
Yeah,
so
he's kind of a boob during the Boer War. I mean, he did escape, but it was his fault they got captured. If you read about Churchill during the Boer War, he was on a train going through enemy territory, and they basically put some rocks on the tracks and captured him, like no problem, him and all his buddies. He was a great man. There's no doubt he was a statesman that we don't have anymore. We have no one the caliber of Churchill anymore. But I don't know his, and this is what Balfour and David Lloyd George and all these other guys were saying about none of them trusted him. They didn't trust his judgment. They thought he was kind of a firebrand and kind of a Hotspur,
mm-hmm.
which we'll go into someday. Henry Hotspur,
Harry Hotspur.
Well, Harry to you, Henry to me, Harry to his friends.
Okay.
But so I don't know. I'm not sure if I, you know, and of course, he didn't really have any problem with his ego. And he thought he could kind of do no wrong. Now, the thing I do like about Churchill is, as prime minister, not during the war even, but after Attlee and he took over again,
mm-hmm.
he denationalized a lot of what Attlee nationalized.
Mm-hmm.
So he was a dyed-in-the-wool conservative, or liberal, really, technically. The terms have been kind of misconstrued now.
A little bit of a flip.
The classical liberal is what we would call a conservative, et cetera. So I do love the way he governed and his views on – you know, national health care, coal, and denationalizing all these.
Well, let me ask you, you brought up coal. He almost suffered really politically in, I want to say, 51 or 52.
The strike?
Not the strike, but the fog that occurred.
The black day.
And because he had encouraged the use of coal for that winter and told people go ahead and burn it,
mm-hmm.
when that particular fog rolled in, and it captures all the coal soot, and thousands of people are hospitalized in the London area and in the south of England. Well, okay, they blame him for it because he's the prime minister and he said go ahead and burn coal. There's a new series on Netflix called The Crown, which it details Elizabeth R. But the number two character in the story is practically Churchill. and the relationship between the monarchy and Churchill.
Okay.
Okay. And so his opponents saw the opportunity to try to use this against him.
Yeah.
The second thing I always loved about Churchill was just coining the phrase, whatever it may be. But the Iron Curtain speech,
yeah,
which was famous speech.
Fulton, Missouri.
Happens in Fulton, Missouri.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen the – you've seen the little Churchill memorial they have there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, in Westminster.
Can you turn your mic back on, though?
Oh, have you lost me?
Yeah.
After some technical difficulties, we'll get back. See, Churchill does that. He screws up everything. What's the matter with that guy? Everything was going swimmingly until we brought him up.
And all of a sudden.
I'm a great admirer of Churchill.
Did you read
World War II,
his volumes?
Yeah, I've read. Well, not all of them, I have to admit. But I did read The Circle Closes, Their Finest Hour. Boy.
Well, here. Yeah, I mean, so the Second World War,
yeah,
by exactly. Like the Grand Alliance.
The Grand Alliance. I read that one.
Okay, they're all available for you on audio.
Oh, get them.
Yeah, at audible.com, and you can get it as an audio, you know, audible trial, if you want. But there's a lot of material out there.
I wonder who does them. I wonder whose voice.
Well,
is.
Let me see who does the Grand Alliance.
It's going to take a great voice to do them justice. A
gentleman by the name of Christian Rotzka is the voice of the of the Second World War, Milestones to Disaster, The Grand Alliance, also by Christian, or voiced by Christian, yeah, Rotzka, Hero of the Empire, not part of that series.
Yeah,
that's a newer book. That's okay. A matter of fact, that's much newer. You can find it in bookstores right now.
Is that Churchill? I guess he's the hero of the empire.
Yes, then. The Boer War, A Daring Escape in the Making of Winston Churchill. If you like the Boer War, you might enjoy that one. The Last Lion. All
yeah,
there for
I read
you.
That. That's William Manchester.
Yeah,
that's one of my favorites.
Audible.com. William Manchester, narrated by Richard Brown.
Okay.
So check those out at audible.com. And if you want a free trial, go to audibletrial.com/thisdayinhistorypodcast. All right. Back with the birthdays. Where are we at? Oh, here's one for you, Armand. 1920, Virginia Mayo, the American actress.
Good-looking gal, and by the way, was in the movie Connecticut Yankee and King Arthur's Court.
Oh, so she's tied to Mark Twain.
Played opposite Bing Crosby.
Yeah.
My uncle actually dated her because he was a hoofer. He was a dancer. She was a dancer.
Yeah.
Both from St. Louis.
Wow.
Said she had terrible acne. Great legs, bad face.
Have you ever seen some of the untouched photos of screen stars from that era?
I know I haven't.
They're really quite remarkable.
Yeah, I don't think I want to see
them. No. They're really quite remarkable, yeah, though. And it's not like acne. It's mostly taking away freckles and,
sure,
and just, you know, minor.
Well, you know, Betty Davis had her own camera, or lighting man. On
really?
No matter what movie it was, she brought him along. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. I think probably Joan Crawford had the same.
Yeah.
They all had their, you know, their makeup men, their special lighting and makeup men.
Well, Rita Hayworth especially was a... You caught her in the right light.
Oh, really? Because she's a beautiful. She
That picture, the famous picture.
Yeah,
It looks so good because of the shadow.
Oh, absolutely. But Rita gave a little bit. It's more than her shadow.
Oh yeah.
She was actually Fred Astaire's favorite dance partner.
No kidding.
Yep.
Yeah.
Rita Hayworth.
I don't think she was Orson Welles' favorite wife, though.
Who else did he? I don't know who else he married.
Yeah, I think he pretty much hated her by the time they got done with Lady in Shanghai.
Orson was no bargain either. Kenosha, Wisconsin.
1927, Robert Guillaume is born. He's still around, yes. 1928, Joe B. Hall, the great American basketball coach, is born. 1929, Dick Clark is born on this date.
See, now, you want to talk about an influence?
There's an influential guy.
We should give him Dick short
Clark.
Shrift.
No,
we don't.
No,
bring
we don't.
Him up. The Philadelphia Sound.
The Philly Sound,
and,
very important. The American Bandstand.
Right, big.
When you could not get widely disseminated music of all types, Bandstand was there for you on a Saturday morning.
Get a load of this. When I was in residency, I actually tried out. He had a game show called The Challengers, and I tried out and I made it, and they were supposed to call me and it got canceled. So I never got
you
to
never
play.
Got to meet
yeah,
Dick.
Yeah, I never got to meet Dick Clark. Damn it. And plus, I could have won a lot of money.
Man, he never aged either until the very end.
Oh, my God.
Till the and I mean to the very end.
Yeah, he looked great.
He looked
better as a corpse than we do.
1930 on November 30th.
One of my personal heroes.
Okay, this I got to read the description.
All right. This
is brilliant.
Don't give it away.
American lawyer, radio host, television actor, and criminal, G. Gordon Liddy.
All right, I object to that last one. G. Gordon's a great man. You ought to, now, if you want to read a book, read Will. I'm sure that's on Audible.
Will?
Yeah. you know, talks about how G. Gordon was afraid of, you know, he was afraid of bats, so he you know, he bites or mice or rats. Right? I think he bit the head off one just to show that. It's a great book. It'll turn you into a radio host, lawyer, criminal, actor.
Well, he's got two books on audiobook Audible.
Well, Will's my favorite.
This is good. When I was a kid, this was a free country.
Okay, that sounds like G. Gordon. Yeah.
And Fight Back, Tackling Terrorism, Liddy Style.
Yeah. You know, well, you know what G. Gordon always said, you know, because I used to listen. Did you ever listen? Probably not. Did you listen to his radio show?
I had an opportunity once to consider putting Liddy's show, the syndicated show, on one of our stations.
Oh.
And we passed on it so quick.
Bad choice.
I think we went with Neil Bortz. A libertarian for you.
Well, he's okay. Neil's okay, but you know, G. Gordon, what do you say? If the ATF comes after you, shoot for their head. They're wearing flag jackets.
1931.
That's a great little advice like that.
the great American football coach, Bill Walsh.
Great coach.
San Francisco 49ers. He's born 1936. Here's a guy I'm sure you don't like. Abby Hoffman, the activist and author and the co-founder of the Youth International Party.
How many of the Chicago 7 can you name right off the top of your head?
None.
Really? Well, you got one, Abby Hoffman.
Okay, I cannot name all seven.
One of them just died. Jane Fonda's husband. What the hell's his name? Well, Freund's, Wiener, Hoffman. Bobby Seale was one of the eight. He had a different. He had a different.
See, folks, this is where
Dellinger. Dellinger.
This is where Armand just needs to use a little machine.
Yeah, but it's
called,
not fair. That's,
what do you mean it's not fair? Here's your Chicago
he's
7.
He's looking it up. Okay, so I did it right off the top.
You did
head.
Okay. Abby Hoffman. Jerry Rubin.
Rubin, God.
David Dillinger.
Dillinger.
Rennie Davis.
Rennie Davis.
John Freund's. Lee Wiener.
Wiener.
Now, the husband of Jane Fonda that you were thinking of, that's Tom Hayden.
Tom Hayden, yeah. Didn't he just die?
Again, Armand.
Yeah, I think
little machine called
he
Google
just died.
How many wives?
I didn't
many,
attend his funeral. By
how
the
many,
way, what? I didn't send flowers.
Yeah, he passed away October 23rd of 2016, Santa Monica, California.
A
couple other birthdays to get to because I want to really hit on some of it. Ridley Scott, the English-born director, producer, and production designer.
Not a criminal. Okay.
Sorry. For my money, one of the great just mega directors. And Alien Covenant is coming up for release in like 2017.
Is that him?
Yes.
Directing?
Yeah.
Okay.
The Martian, which just starred Matt Damon. That was Ridley.
A little long, but not bad.
By the way, his brother Tony Scott was just as good for the action genre films.
Yeah,
he has since passed, but the Scott brothers were terrific. Robin Hood, Body of Lies, one of my favorites, American Gangster with Denzel Washington.
Okay.
Black Hawk Down. Gladiator, Thelma and Louise, Blade Runner,
I guess
Alien.
Didn't he win the Academy Award for that one?
For which one?
Gladiator?
Yeah, they won Best Picture. And I think he got the Best Director nod as well.
I think he got Best Director.
Also in 1943, another film director is born, Terrence Malick.
I'm not familiar except what Thin Red Line, which I hated.
They're generally a little tough to watch.
Yeah.
Tree of Life is the most recent one. And Brad Pitt is in that one. And they're art pieces more so than anything else. Okay.
I hate art pieces.
Here is a writer and director I love. David Mamet, born on this date in 1947. Now, Mamet's stage plays, if you know them, are obviously
American Buffalo, Glengarry, Glen Ross.
Speed the Plow,
right.
Okay.
Chicago guy. He's a Chicago native. He's Chicago theater started. Now, I don't think you like his politics, though.
I don't really care about his politics.
I would recommend, if you want to read some Mamet, Secret Knowledge on the Dismantling of American Culture.
Mm-hmm.
That's Mamet going off.
Let me tell you three of his films, though.
Okay.
Now, because he did write a lot of movies, but he also directed. He has 20 directing credits between TV and film, but there's three of them that have always stood out to me. One is a completely underrated film starring Steve Martin. And you got to, this is like from the late 90s. Let me check. 1997. The Spanish Prisoner is one of the great con movies.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
Of
that.
All
Steve
time.
Martin's in that?
Wonderful.
I saw it. Yeah.
Steve Martin and Rebecca Pidgeon, who is, by the way, Mamet's wife.
His wife, yeah.
The next one that I liked was State and Main, which is about,
good movie.
Okay.
Good movie.
And the one I loved was Gene Hackman, Ricky Jay, and Danny DeVito in Heist.
I don't think I've seen it.
Brilliant movie. Okay. Yeah, I love a good heist movie. Tell me there's a movie where they're going to steal something, I'm there.
Okay. Well, I like my favorite David Mamet movie by far is The Verdict.
Well, that's 1982. Yeah. Now, he's not a director, but he is a writer.
He wrote it, but it's great. And his wife was in that, too. Paul Newman, that was probably his last great role, in my opinion. Got nominated.
No, it's not his last great role.
James Mason.
You're crazy if you think that's Newman's last great role. The Color of Money, 1986, for one. Fast Eddie Felsen.
I think that was kind of a gimme. I think it's much better in The Hustler.
Well, you think that was a lifetime achievement?
Yes, absolutely. That was.
I would tell you to go back and watch The Color of Money then.
All right. Wasn't that great a movie?
But he also wrote films like We're No Angels.
Yeah, I didn't like that one. The original We're No Angels is actually very good.
He wrote The Untouchables.
Yeah, that's right.
How about
right.
that? He did Hill Street Blues.
Guy was very prolific. Still is.
Absolutely. Sort of the famous Brat Pack movie about last night his.
Yeah.
That's based on his play, which I love the title, Sexual Perversity in Chicago.
That's Mamet.
That's terrific. Born on this date in 1947. Also on this date in 1952, Mandy Patinkin, who, if you have not seen in Homeland, Armand, who plays Saul Berenson, head of the CIA.
Okay.
Tremendous. Just tremendous.
We had a question in the trivia contest the other night about the Princess Bride.
Yeah, he's in Princess Bride.
That, yeah. Mm-hmm.
1955, Billy Idol used to hang upside down to get his hair to stand up like that.
Okay.
Did?
See, now that's the kind of thing that...
1960, Gary Lineker is born, the famous English football, now a commentator. You can still see Gary on television every weekend, even here in the United States. 1962, Bo Jackson is born.
Probably one of the greatest athletes
ever.
Of the century. Yeah.
Ever.
Only man to be on two All-Star, football and baseball All-Star teams.
Just amazing.
Yeah. Unfortunately, he had...
He messed up his
osteonecrosis
hip.
Osteonecrosis
in a playoff game for
the
Los Angeles Raiders. They say in the 30 for 30 special, on Bo, there's a physician stating he was basically so powerful he tried to run out of the tackle that he himself just
ran out of his hip. I believe it. Unless he's so muscular, you know,
and
that takes a lot.
But there are things that people in Alabama, particularly at Auburn, they sound apocryphal, but they say really happened, and I tend to believe them. Especially considering some of the things around Bo and a baseball bat.
Well, I remember that's on probably on YouTube where he strikes out and smack and.
Well, he could crack that
over his knee.
He could do it over his head.
Yeah. Oh wow. Okay.
Yeah. He's the only major leaguer I've ever seen. So you're supposed to have your phone off during the show. Yeah. They were taping a show here, Armand.
Don't worry, it's not a chick.
Okay.
Or I would have.
But
shows
there
over.
is a root there. I'm not kidding. Okay. I showed this to the guys in the office once because they always thought it was sort of played up. Mm-hmm. He once beat out a routine ground ball to second base for a base hit.
I believe it.
He hit a chopper on AstroTurf. It was very routine, two bouncer. Guy fielded it, did not hesitate.
Cleanly. Yeah.
Made a good, clean field, clean throw, safe.
I think the only guy that really compares to him, I think, back then, at least when I was a kid, was him and Herschel Walker. Remember the things he could
do? Those are the two. Because Herschel was a track star.
Yeah.
I think Bo could have been a track star, perhaps. I think Herschel had better top-end speed.
Bo was a decathlete, and he didn't like the long – this is true. He did not like the 1,500-meter or whatever.
Why would you?
Well, he didn't have to. He usually had enough points.
He didn't
have to run it. It's a true story.
I'll take this one off.
He only needed 9 events. That's what kind of athlete he was.
Finally, born on this date in 1965, Ben Stiller.
We are not amused.
Well, I used to enjoy some of this
stuff.
Although,
I got to say, Tropic Thunder is hilarious.
It's fantastic.
And Mystery Men is funny, too.
Oh, you like Mystery Men?
Yeah, I do.
There was a movie he was in with Edward Norton. And he's a rabbi, and Norton's a priest. And I'll forget the name of it, but...
It's
a real cute movie. It's definitely worth.
I did see that.
Definitely worth one watch.
What you're talking about? Not bad.
Okay, let's get back to our big topics before we finish up. I'm going to bring this one up simply for this fact. Armand does not like these, But I do, and I think it's important culturally. In 1872, on November the 30th, the first ever international football match takes place at Hamilton Crescent, Glasgow, Scotland, between the Scotland national side and the English national side. This is really the advent of professional international football, which leads to the World Cup, not very quickly, I might add, not until about 1930. In fact, right. I think 1930 is the first World Cup.
Yep.
So it took some time, almost 60 years. But professionalized sports are being codified in Europe at the time, specifically England. And they're also being codified in the United States at the time,
right.
Specifically baseball.
Okay, you can have that one. Now, if you personally, if I want to see Scotland versus England, I'll read up on the Battle of Culloden.
Well, Battle of Culloden, let me tell you about the cultural influence. You remember, in England, even, you know, post-Industrial Revolution, the workday was first 6 days a week. You got Sunday off.
I'm not for that.
Okay.
Should be 7 days a week.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
12 hours, except for kids. 11 and a half.
So
I love getting
eventually,
under your skin.
Yeah. They got it to a half day on Saturday.
Because of this? Because of football?
No.
Okay.
But English matches to this day have a traditional 3 p.m. GMT kickoff because when the league was formed, the workers got off at noon, could go home, have lunch, and get to the ground by 3.
All right.
Grounds weren't lit.
Oh, yeah.
So a match takes 90 minutes. The sun sets during the winter in England very early. It's usually dark by 4:45.
Well, that makes sense.
Hence, 3 o'clock kickoff. You're out by 5. You go home in the dark.
Okay, no stoppage time?
Yeah, you do, but you're okay. Yeah.
Well,
and I don't know how much halftime they took.
Yeah,
either.
That too.
But the advent of professionalized sports as recreation that starts, and a big step towards that was on this date in 1872. And finally, I want to touch on this because this was a cultural impactor.
Yeah,
and it had to be for you as well.
It was for me.
In 1982, on this date, the best-selling recorded album in history is released. His second solo album, Michael Jackson's Thriller.
Yeah, I don't want to detract from this album, but I thought Eagles' Greatest Hits was the best-selling album of all time.
I don't know how they rank these anymore, but I remember at the time that the things I would see in Rolling Stones, I remember Thriller hitting about 30 million.
Well, that's more than.
Well, see, I don't know how they counted, though.
Or if you go to a trivia contest, I think, and they ask, what's the best-selling album of all time? I think you're better served if you say Eagles' Greatest Hits, but I don't know, since you've got it right there.
You know, at one point I knew something like one out of every 10 Americans actually owned the album.
Well, I believe it if it sold that many.
The set.
I just remember the premiere of the video. Now, who directed that? Was that a big? Who's,
Landis.
Was it John?
Let me. I'll have to check that, but I think that was Landis.
And then Vincent Price doing the voiceover.
Vincent Price did that. Yeah.
That was kind of a big deal. I was in college and we were on a wrestling trip actually, and I remember my roommate had to see. I didn't know what the hell. Even back then, I was an old curmudgeon, and I didn't want to see it, but. It was like 17 minutes. I thought it was like a music video. I was basically familiar with music videos. I thought it was a song. This thing is 17 minutes long.
It was,
does this thing end?
So, okay, here's the length. The album cut is 5:58.
What do you mean the album?
So what's on the vinyl?
Yeah.
Thriller.
Yeah.
With the Vincent Price opening.
That song.
5:58.
But the video's like 20
Oh, the video's
long.
A short movie.
Yeah,
it's a 15, 16-minute movie. Here's your track list. Want to Be Starting Something.
Oh, yeah, good song.
Great song. Baby Be Mine, The Girl Is Mine, Thriller. That's side one.
Pretty good.
Side two, to this day, it's hard to get a pop side better than this. I don't know if it's possible. Beat It, Billie Jean, Human Nature, PYT, and The Lady in My Life.
Now, I think, though, that didn't – now, that one didn't have 5 number ones, right? Wasn't that – was that Beat It that had 5 number ones? Because that's another trivia question.
Beat It?
Or Billie Jean, whatever. What was the next album he had?
Bad.
Bad. Okay, that had 5 number ones, right? This one didn't.
Yeah, I'd have to look on the number ones from that, but –
I think that one has the record for number one.
It was hard to imagine someone bigger than Michael Jackson.
Once this
came out. And this is his second album. And Off the Wall, his first album – is tremendous.
Well, I actually like Ben.
You got to go. You like the Rat song. Yeah, yeah, but that's
Michael
the Jackson 5.
He was just a kid. I like
you just like to sit
I
there
have
and
to
think.
Admit, Ben, I'm not a big fan, but
the two of us.
Right, I grant you, the man had a modicum of talent.
A modicum,
a couple of iotas.
So,
impact is undeniable.
His impact's undeniable, but it's one of those things where I think it got so big. When something gets that big, it just has to warp
what
the person.
To that guy, though, what do you? Yeah, what? I mean, that's I
in retrospect
that's,
after his
on his birthday
after
we'll go
his
into it,
in, you know in retrospect
really
after his
it.
Passing, Armand. One of the things that came out after he passed away that was I thought significant was, you know, people always made light of the Pepsi commercial and the burn.
Burned himself. Yeah,
you know, his hair catching on fire.
Right,
and that came a joke. That was really no joke. That was really very serious, and he really did suffer from it, mm-hmm. and it was really traumatic. Obviously, I don't think he had a childhood.
No.
I think his dad was incredibly rough on him.
Is that guy still alive?
Joe Jackson? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the fact that he was sort of the bell cow, you know, and at a young age. You know, you can see the video. I mean, he's on Bandstand with Dick Clark in the early 70s, and it's clearly Michael's show and the big older brothers behind him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that comes tough. And then not only are you expected to do well, you actually deliver with the help of Quincy Jones in the production of Thriller. And when you deliver, guess what? You don't even get to do your own tour. You get to go on tour with your brothers, the Victory Tour. That was the Jacksons. It wasn't just Michael. It was the Jacksons.
I like to think my profession had a lot to do with his death, you know.
Podiatry?
Medicine.
Well, you can't give a human being that much propofol.
Not a good idea.
Jeez.
And the guy's still I don't know. I think they took his license away.
I hope they did.
Marvin something?
Just the track list alone on the album Thriller is just amazing. Just amazing.
Zeppelin 4, it's kind of tough to beat.
It's right up there.
Goat's Head Soup, Abbey Road, those are big ones, but those are pretty good sides.
Cost them $750,000 to make Thriller.
Oh, the video.
No, the album.
Oh, the album.
That's amazing. You can't.
That's reasonable.
Even in 1982, $83, that is cheap. And I'm sure it sounded like a lot. I mean, but come on. It's just remarable. All right, let's finish up.
Now the deaths.
Let's finish up with some deaths. I only have four. Do you have any to add?
Don't need to.
Okay, there's four. There's four good ones here. I'm just going to say a quote, and I hope I get this quote right.
Right.
Either the curtains go or I go.
That was his last words, I think.
And that's the last words.
I'll give another quote. I can resist anything except temptation.
And those are the words of Oscar Wilde.
My favorite author.
Really?
Wilde seconds. S.J. Perlman first, probably Wilde second.
Wilde second.
Yeah.
So he passed away on this date, November the 30th.
On his birthday, we'll really go into some detail.
I got
plenty to say, but it's getting a little late.
But he did so in 1900. 1900 even.
In Paris. Yep.
On this date in 1979. The
Forgotten Marx brother.
Yeah. Zeppo Marx.
Herbert
passes away.
The youngest.
Can you name the other? I know you can. The other sort of forgotten Marx brother.
Well, you mean Milton, Gummo?
Gummo.
Yeah. Zeppo was actually married to Barbara Marx, his wife, and she divorced him and married Frank Sinatra.
No kidding.
Yeah. And he actually became an agent and a very successful agent, by the way. In Hollywood,
and now Zeppo,
so he did fine.
Now Zeppo played a straight in the films, right?
Apparently, he was the funniest. You know, if you ask anybody when they were at parties or whatever, he was funnier than any of the other
guys.
Did
he do the vaudeville circuit with them?
I don't think so. Gummo did, and then Gummo went away to war.
Yeah,
and then I guess he took over because he was pretty young. He was born 1901. Which makes him.
Yeah, he was born in 1901. Died in 1979.
Yeah.
Then in 1996, on this date, Tiny Tim passed away. The renowned ukulele
married.
Player. Now, did you see?
I saw him get married.
Did you watch that?
I'm old enough
Tonight
to
Show.
Miss Vicky. Yeah, he married her on the Tonight Show.
What year? 70s?
72, 73.
Like that? Okay, I would have been.
And she posed naked.
I would have been a baby.
And I had that.
Yeah.
Here's
what a routine.
Yeah, he had his little shtick, didn't he?
What a routine.
He did all right with it.
He sure did.
I would call him a little effeminate, but You know me, I'm all man.
Well, yeah, you like to wrestle.
Steeped in testosterone.
Yes. And then on this date in 2007, again, as a kid, there was no one imitated more in the 1970s to the chagrin of parents everywhere.
Oh, yeah? What did you jump on your bicycle?
Okay, here's what we would do. You were allowed to burn leaves in our neighborhood in the 1970s.
Oh, jumping the shark, huh?
So we would pile up leaves, get our ramp out. We'd have a good, sort of a flexible ramp, with plywood where it would bend just enough. And we would get the ramp out, do some jumps. When we got tired of just doing some jumps, we'd rake the leaves. And our parents would be like, oh, great, the kids are raking the leaves. Set the leaves on fire, put the ramp at the edge, jump over the fire.
Ah, sheer madness.
Great fun. Great fun. Never once did I get hurt.
Never did a river, though, huh? Or a stream or a creek?
We did have a trail where we could go, and it was around a creek, but there was a car hood that was placed over the creek so you could cross it. You didn't actually jump the creek. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, there was no Snake Valley for us to make an attempt at. By the way, we're talking about Evel Knievel, who passed away on this date in 2007.
And I think one of the million-dollar questions on Millionaire, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, was what was his first name?
Oh, jeez.
Was it Rodney or something? It was started with an R.
But his son was Robbie. So
yeah, Robbie Knievel. But yeah, his real name.
Let me check real quick for you, Armon.
Enough, since you do have.
Yeah, Robert Craig.
Robert Craig.
Evel Knievel. The Suits. Astounding.
Yeah, nice. And they had a great that was actually a great. It's on YouTube, the Evel Knievel celebrity roast. They give him a pretty hard time. It's pretty funny.
And I can remember as a kid watching him jump I think 7 or 8 Greyhounds at the Astrodome.
Yeah, but that Snake River thing, that turned into a fiasco.
That was a fiasco. Yeah, but he jumped at Wembley. Okay. I remember him jumping a Shark Tank, I think, in Chicago.
Oh, like the Fonz.
Yeah, yeah. But before the Fonz even jumped the shark, okay? I don't remember the Caesar's Palace jump where it all went wrong, where he jumped the fountains. But here's the thing. You would see these jumps back then, and they'd be like, oh, my God, that's remarkable. Now, if you go to any sort of bike show, like an off-road series show or one of the shows they have at a dome stadium where they do an indoor track, all the guys routinely do jumps of this nature where they literally just hang on to the bars, body off the bike, body back onto the bike, and it's no big deal.
Well, that's civilization marches on.
It's remarkable.
It's pure technology.
And in the 1970s, this was tune-in stuff, and now it's just a warm-up at a stadium.
Yeah, well, we're
absolutely amazing.
De-evolution.
But boy, I mean, we had the little Evel Knievel Dowel and motorcycle.
You had one?
Yeah, you would put it in.
I had a lunchbox.
Crank it up and then send them off down the hallway. And
I had my Evel Knievel lunchbox.
Oh, it's fantastic.
All right.
God, I miss the 70s.
That's a good way to end this show.
I do. Man, I miss the 70s sometimes. All right, that'll do it for this edition of This Day in History. Don't forget, follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/thisdayinhistorypodcast, and on Twitter as well. Same drill, This Day in History Podcast, and our website where you can find blogs and every episode. We release shows Monday through Friday, except on major holidays, but we'll have a Thanksgiving show for you as you saw last week, or hopefully if you haven't checked out some of our past episodes, do so. We're only a couple episodes in, but please subscribe. And you can do so on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Podbean, or any major podcast outlet. For producer Brian Kroc, I'm Tony Hubert, and for my partner Armon Kachigian, we will talk to you tomorrow when December the 1st rolls around here on lineupmedia.fm.
This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.